Okay, so welcome everyone to the September 25th, 2019 9/11 and Other Deep State Crimes Monthly Teleconference. And Craig, do you want to take the role first?
Sure. I think what Ann and I agreed was that we want to kind of update our list of people's affiliations. So what I might do is just as I'm reading the names, when I get to a name that I think we need to update, I'll just ask that person what affiliation or what sort of designation they would like next to their name in the minutes, or nothing. You know, there's no obligation. But if you're part of a group, then it's always kind of good to add that on there. So we just had someone join with a 727 number. Who's that?
Steve.
Sorry.
Steve.
What's your last
Steve?
Name?
Steve? Yeah.
Yeah, Steve.
What's your last name, Steve?
McBrayer.
Okay, how do we spell that?
McBrayer.
Okay, Steve McBrayer. Okay, great. All right, so I'll do the roll then. Well, I'll start with Steve. We just got him. Is there a particular, when we do the minutes, Steve, is there any particular group or any kind of affiliation you want us to list with your name, or are you just on your own?
I'm just on my own.
Okay. All right. So I have Steve. I have Ann Hendricks, Kat McGuire. Kat, what designation do you – do you want to kept as is? I think we had Truth Action Outreach or something for you.
Yeah, that's not me. Why don't you just do deeptruth.info? Capital
D, capital T,
deeptruth.info. One word, deeptruth.info.
Got it, deeptruth.info. Good. Then we have Cheryl, we have myself, Craig McKee, David Rold. I think we've asked him recently, Fern Tishman. Fern, is there a particular designation you'd like next to your name?
No, I'm just grateful to be able to be part of this call.
Okay, great. James Hufford, I know what James is. Joanne, is it Takara? Am I pronouncing that correctly, Takara?
Actually, Takara. The C sounds like an S, Tishara.
Deshara, okay, good to know. John O'Malley, Carl Golovin. Carl, is there a particular designation you want next to your name?
John, I have a domain forwarded to something online. It's anidealivson.net.
Boy, you're going to have to do that again because you cut out as it was going.
Anidealivson.net.
Ah, I got it that time. An idea lives on, okay.
Thank you.
Got it. Great. And then we have Lynn Bradbury, and you're still the main group, Lynn?
May 9/11 Truth,
right. Kip Beckford. Kip, is there a particular designation you want with your name? Kip, are you there?
Sons of Liberty, Boston. Sorry.
Sorry, say that again.
Sons of Liberty, Boston.
Sons of Liberty, Boston. Got it. Malcolm Arnold. Malcolm, what do you want listed?
No designation for now. Thank you.
Okay. Marie Spike.
Yes, 9/11 Truth Action Project.
Okay, got it. Pat O'Connell. Are you a TAP as well, aren't you, Pat?
Sorry, I was on there. We are tx911truth.us. So we're Texas now.
Sorry, I couldn't hear the first word.
TX, as in Texas, 911truth.us.
Truth.us, okay. Peter Ketchum, I know. Richard Gage, I know. Xander, I know, so I think Xander Arena, so I think we're all set to go, Cheryl.
Okay, great. You all got the minutes from last month. Thanks, Anne, for writing those up. We really appreciate that. And are there any objections to the minutes of last month? Hearing none, then they're approved. And let's move on to the agenda. So the agenda is kind of crazy because we had Phil Giraldi on, and he had a death in the family. And that only happened, like, on Friday or Saturday. So we scrambled to try and get new speakers. And so it's kind of a jumbled, but this is what we agreed on. We're going to have Richard Gage first, then Joanne, then Kat, and then the anniversary updates. Any objections to the agenda as just stated? Okay, hearing none, then they're approved, and we'll consider them approved, and let's begin. Richard, you're first, so you ready to go?
I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. We had quite a September anniversary. It started out on September 3rd with the release of the Holsey Report, which is an exciting study of World Trade Center 7, which completely pulls the rug out from underneath the NIST report of Building 7, exposing its false assumptions and fraudulence, and determining that in order for the building to come down as it did, all the columns in the building had to give way virtually all at once. So that can only be done by one thing, as we know. So it's very helpful. We're getting that out now to the world and asking you to do the same. We are sending it to the top 94 Masters of Science colleges for structural engineering and in the country. And we've got connections in Europe. Do you want to check on that newcomer, Rick?
Why don't you just continue, Richard, and we'll catch him when you're done.
Okay, good. We're going to get it out to Europe colleges as well. So that announcement then was made at subsequent conferences, including by Leroy himself in Berkeley on September 5th. By the way, if you want to see his presentation, it's available on our website. You can click on it, and you can watch the hour-long plus live stream of it, archived. But I gave the announcement at the New York conference, which was an extraordinary conference because, A, the Lawyers Committee put it on, B, it was fully attended. It was packed with 250 people on September 7th. So that is or will be available to watch as well. There were some great speakers there, including Mark Crispin Miller, Rachel Hughes, a victim, survivor with dust issues, huge issues, health issues with dust. Then we have many other speakers. I encourage you to look at all of them, including Dave Meiswinkel and Christopher Gioia, of course, who gave the most powerful speech I could have imagined. He is the one of five fire commissioners who unanimously called for a new investigation of 9/11 on from the Franklin Square, which is a city in New York. So the first elected body to get to call for a new investigation based on specifically on the evidence at the World Trade Center and calling it explosive demolition, which is just really great. So we took him down to Washington, D.C., where we had a press conference the morning of 9/11, along with Dave Meiswinkel and Robert McElvain, Bob, and the four of us gave our respective announcements, myself on the Holsey Report, Christopher Gioia, Fire Commissioner, on the resolution and announcing the Justice for 9/11 Heroes campaign. She's just going to town on, he wants to get all the fire districts on board with getting a new resolution. And he's got several already that he's successfully working on. And then we fanned out across Washington, D.C. with local help from Washington, D.C., from D.C. 9/11 Truth, and we gave packets to all 535 congresspersons, and also had two dozen appointments. And I myself met with Representative Steve King. And we also met with another representative, I can't remember the name right offhand, but then the rest of them were staffers. And we had some really, really good responses from the representatives or staffers. For instance, Steve King really listened from Iowa to the evidence and asked some key questions. It was all new to him. He was fascinated with it. So I need to follow up with him. And all in all, I think it was a very, very fantastic outreach. We would have liked to have more media. We had Fox News show up, but they didn't report anything. That was national Fox News, too, in D.C. So I don't know what we have to do to get mainstream attention for our cause, but we've been trying everything. We certainly sent all of them through PR Newswire lookalike. That's it for me. There's a couple
Hi,
of
this is Sherry. Just joined the call from San Diego.
Hi, Sherry.
Okay. Yeah, this is Barb Honegger. I just joined. I would appreciate when you all want me to update on Zurich. I'm still in the middle of a lawyers committee board call, which is critical. Maybe somebody could call me, and I'll call in and give the Zurich event update.
Okay, we probably won't get to that, Barbara, until like 6:15 or something, so you should be fine, but if you're not here at the time, we'll call you, okay?
Okay, good. Thank you.
Great.
All right.
Okay, great. So I'm going to put this into Q&A mode right now. And if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 6. And I got to unmute Richard if he's muted. Let's see. Yep. Okay, Richard, you should be unmuted now. Any questions? Star 6 to get in the queue. I see we have one from Anne. Let's see. Anne, go ahead.
Hi, Richard. This is Anne Hendricks. Thanks for everything you do. As always, we all are indebted to you. My question is, I'd like to do a mailing, and I had sent a note about if it's possible to provide a summary of Dr. Halsey's report. I see that there is a summary in the report itself. It's about 4 pages. I wonder if there's any way to get it to 2 pages, because then I could have it printed double-sided and mail it. It would be take only one stamp, and then with a letter. I could mail it to engineers and architects here in Minnesota. That's one question. If you will be providing a summary like that, that would be useful that we could use as we...
Let's take it one at a time. Yeah, we can do that, certainly. If you want to take a stab at it and email it to me, I'll take it from there. That motivates me when I get emails that where some of the work is done, and then it's easier to just follow up.
For myself to reduce the summary to 2 pages from 4? Is that what
you're
saying?
Yeah, email it to me. I'll edit it.
Okay.
Back.
Okay.
My email is rgage@ae911truth.org.
Okay, and the other part of it is when we do reach out to these folks, how do we know we're not mailing the choir, contacting those who are already signed up? Is there any way that I might learn, or how would we learn, like who in our states already belong, have already signed the petition or already belong? Is there any kind of breakdown so that to do a mailing, that we won't be duplicating efforts?
Well, don't send it to the deans of the Structural Engineering Master of Science program. We'll do that officially, formally, you know, in the way we imagine that it will best be received. So, but if you could send it to every structural engineer and every physicist and every mathematician and every, I don't know who else, that you know, certainly elected representatives and media representatives, that could be really helpful if we get that done on a mass scale.
Okay, I'll commit to 100, and I'll send you a summary. Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks, Ann.
Okay, great. And next we have Malcolm. Malcolm Arnold, go ahead.
Yes. You said that five commissioners from this town, five fire commissioners from this town approved this. Was that unanimous as far as all the fire commissioners in that town? And then in addition, what has been the response from other fire commissioners around the country? Have any of them signed on, sort of like, you know, architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth who actually sign on and or endorse it? So I'm kind of curious as to if any people with that background have endorsed it.
All five fire commissioners that were unanimous. There's been no other fire commissioners that have called for a new investigation that we're aware of. The idea came up to have our own petitioners sign on to the Halsey report, but if that's what you're referring to, I think that's a great idea. So you get basically 3,000 signatures right away, right, on the Halsey report. That could add a lot of power to it. But I don't think that's what you're asking, actually, was it?
Yeah, well, yeah, what I'm asking is that question as far as if you're able to get other people to sign on to that report who have those qualifications, then it's really going to add a lot of weight behind the report. They can just sign as independent citizens and not, you know, use their title, but that's kind of tricky, the whole thing. But, you know, it's as far as, you know, the job risk that's involved there, but it's really a gutsy move that they came out and did this. So I'm just kind of curious what's been the response within the firefighting community, especially at the level of commissioners.
There's been all kinds of responses. There's positive and negative. That would be a question for Chris, but he certainly got the gamut, you know. Some people freaked out. He's gotten calls, you know, from people who aren't happy. So that's the way it goes, you know. But regarding no one else is going to sign on to a specific resolution provided by the Franklin Square Munson Fire District other than the five commissioners. So again, I'm not specifically sure what you're asking, but I personally like the idea of having our 3,000 architects and engineers sign on to the Halsey report. But as far as getting citizens to sign on, that's a question for Chris. He is starting 9/11 Justice for Heroes campaign. I actually think it's a great idea to have the citizens of Munson Square sign on to his report. We're not managing him. I would write him a letter, an email, and encourage him to do that. You could do that through the contact us form on the Franklin Square Munson Fire District with an email suggestion to him.
Okay. Anything else, Malcolm? You all set?
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, great.
Thanks, Malcolm.
Xander, you're next. Xander, are you there? Xander Arena.
Guys, so sorry, I was on mute. Okay, so Richard, great job on everything. I'm curious if we've gotten responses, comments to the Halsey report coming in, any technical comments or any suggestions that you're aware of?
Chad has been collecting those, and yes, we have had comments. And we will be responding to those, or we, not we, but Leroy, will be over the next couple of months incorporating them into his final report.
Great.
But one of the comments I can tell you that's caused a stir is that the resolution of the animations is not as complex or refined as the resolution of the animations from NIST, from their LS Dyna report, which is a million-dollar platform that they had access to that we don't. So that's been a criticism, which we're Tony Zambotti is addressing that now.
Okay. And I just had a curiosity, when you were in Congress and the Senate, was your impression that the response was positive this year from these staffers? I know sometimes we get a smiling face, but, I mean, did you feel a sense of genuine support?
I think three-quarters of the people we encountered were positive and engaged. One-quarter of them were, you know, when are you going to get out of my office, which is an improvement from last year. I think a quarter of them were, genuinely, one of them was an out, or two of them were outright truthers. And that's discussed in the article that has been written for us that is going to be sent to our supporters within days.
Okay, great. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Xander.
Yep.
Okay, next is Carl Gullivan. Carl, go ahead.
Richard, hi. I just received an email from AE911 Truth about Ron and Sana spoke about the controlled implosion of number 7 recently.
Yeah, Carl.
I'm just curious, have you been able to make contact with him directly? It would be interesting if there could be a direct interview with him. Also, I'm sure you remember Mark Haynes from CNBC spoke at length about, clearly there were explosions and demolition, not just airplanes that brought down the buildings. He, of course, died young sometime thereafter, but maybe Ron could share whether he ever spoke with Mark about his perspective.
I had a distraction, Carl. I missed the key point of the question there. I apologize. My fault. Could you help me?
Well, I guess I was just asking if you could share about what has come out about Ron and Sana from CNBC referencing controlled implosion on the 18th anniversary. And just as a recommendation, it would be interesting to get Ron and Sana to address whether he ever spoke with Mark Haynes of CNBC, who on 9/11/01 actually spoke of the demolitions being not from airplanes.
Yeah, we have contacted Insana, but we haven't gotten a response back. So I don't know, he hasn't been asked that question or any question, really. The article on Insana, I think, came out, it's posted in different places, so I'm a little confused on whether it's actually how much detail you got and what version, but there's some interesting information on him, but I don't think he's responded whatsoever to Andy's efforts to contact him.
Okay, thanks. I just thought it would be especially interesting if he had ever spoken with Mark Haynes because they were colleagues at CNBC. And
what's the point with Mark Haynes?
Mark Haynes, I'm sure you're familiar with what he said on 9/11 as the, like, within a half hour of the buildings coming down. He said, yeah, clearly there must be an investigation of what brought these buildings down. Yeah, he made it very clear it could not have been the airplanes.
Ah.
No, it's really very dramatic.
Yeah, that is clear. I didn't know about that, believe it or not, Carl.
I think it's even in, it might be in one of AE's videos, but I'll find a link and send it to you. Mark Haynes, who died a few years later, a young death, heart attack, presumably, I'm not sure what. But since he was a colleague of Ron Insana, it seems almost certain they must have talked about it.
Okay.
That's it.
Thanks.
Okay, and the last person on the queue is Sherry Aspen. Sherry, go ahead.
Hi, Richard, and thank you so much for all that you're doing. We really appreciate your courage.
Thanks, Sherry.
I have a question. Somebody said something about signing on with Leroy's report. Is that something we all should be doing? And then that's just for scientists.
It's a scientific report.
Okay.
It's not. We're not going to gain credibility by having citizens sign on
to
it.
That's what I thought. And then,
to have architects and engineers sign on to it. I don't know if we'll do that. It's just an idea right now.
That's a good idea. And also, if I were to go down to the local fire department and share the fact that the Franklin Square and Munster fire commissioners signed on to this demand for an investigation, what one page would I print out and bring to show them the proof of this? Would you recommend?
The text of the resolution and the article about the resolution is included in an article on our website, which is reachable by clicking on the top slide on our website on that particular subject.
All right.
So I would print that out and take it down. Maybe there's a way, once you print it out, maybe you might have to reformat it somehow so it looks better than a print off of a website.
Okay.
But we don't have a one-page
PDF. And then maybe we have one of those DVD duplicators. Ted and Elise have one, and maybe we could print out one of the DVDs, and I can bring that over with it, and that would be pretty strong, seems like.
Yeah, the best DVD would be the 15-minute video by Ed Asner called Solving the Mystery of World Trade Center 7. That DVD itself is available on our website, but you can watch and send the link. You can watch and send the link on YouTube, then it will be free.
And then we can make some and bring it to the fire department with a printout of that fire department resolution so they see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly. I think that would be very powerful.
Well, thank you. That's about all. And thank you again for everything you're doing.
Thank you, Sherry.
Okay, Richard, so there aren't any other questions, but I did want to thank you myself for all that you do. And this last past weekend, I was up with Lynn Bradbury in Maine at the Organic Farmers Fair with its 9/11 table, and several people came up to me and said they were members of AE, and it was really nice to have that support there. So, and we used a lot of your material,
wow.
So thank you for that, too.
I love it when that happens. Yeah, thanks for telling me.
Yeah, it was great. So, okay. Anybody else have a question for Richard before we move? Oh, okay. Richard, thank you very much. Really
thanks, Sherry. Cheryl.
Okay. Richard, I'm sorry. I muted you. Were you finished saying what you were saying?
Yeah, I'm done.
You? You're done. Okay, great. Okay, next we're going to hear from Joan Teixeira, I guess it's pronounced, and James Hufford is going to be introducing her. So, James, if you're ready to go.
Cheryl, I just want to mention we should do the lecture mode thing this time just to eliminate the background noise. Okay, great.
Thank you for reminding me, but I just did it. Yeah, thanks. Okay, James, are you with us?
He might be muted.
Oh, yes, I think he is.
Yeah, I got it here. Yeah, he's.
You got it? Okay, thanks.
Okay,
yeah.
Now I can. Anyway, Joanne called me out of blue Hawaii, I guess you might say, one day, and and said that she had a message or a story to tell me, and what she told me was much of what she's going to be covering in her presentation. She's be kind to her. You might not all agree with her, but with her conclusions. But she's not an ideologue. So she's a researcher, and she's presenting what she found and connecting the dots, you know, as we all do from our own perspective. So I think it's my thought was that this would be really good for the group to hear, and maybe Joanne, and I've talked to her about this, will join us on our monthly calls hereafter and contribute quite a bit. Anyway, Joanne Teixeira was born and raised in Hawaii, the same as many notables such as singer Don Ho, actor Jack Lord, Barack Obama's real father, Frank Marshall Davis, elderly industrialist Henry J. Kaiser, who her parents knew, and others. Because the public schools were of poor quality at the time, she attended private schools until she graduated from high school. She has two master's degrees in vocational rehabilitation and educational counseling. She speaks three languages besides English, Spanish, Portuguese, which I share with her. That's my second language. And Hawaiian Pidgin English. Her background as a researcher began when Barry Obama was thrust on the national stage and ran for the presidency. Her professional experiences include collaboration on a Portuguese grammar textbook in use over 20 years, a rehabilitation coordinator for an insurance company for 5 years, a teacher of Portuguese grammar and conversation for 3 years, and a teacher of English and Spanish-speaking elementary children, 16 years. She presently, which I would say is quite a varied background, she presently lives in Honolulu, Hawaii. Her Hawaiian first name is Lani, which means heaven or sky. So take it away, Joanne.
Hi, Joanne might be muted. Let me unmute her here. Let's see. Okay, Joanne, you're unmuted.
Okay, good. Thank you for that introduction, James. I always thought, you know, there was such a disadvantage to growing up in Hawaii, so far from the mainland where, you know, the country and all the history of our country started. But as I've grown up, I've realized that I really had some significant experiences in life that, you know, affect my view on the world, and hopefully I can share some of those with you. Now, my brother, where we lived in Hawaii was Kahalu. This is, almost nobody's ever heard of it. It is about 18 miles outside of Honolulu, and it's quite a nice area when you consider that it's still pretty rustic in that area. And it's got a gorgeous view. Part of Jurassic Park was filmed not very far from where I grew up. This area of Hawaii, Kahalu, my brother surfed with someone who was the son of the first American, the Chinese American senator, Senator Hiram Fong. And my brother also served with Kurt Minch across the street from Senator Fong, who Kurt Minch was a runner, a track runner, and so he was quite famous at the high school that he went to, Castle High School. I attended a different high school, a private high school in Honolulu. But Kurt Minch lived right next door to Barack Obama's real father, Frank Marshall Davis. And the reason I say that that's his real father is mostly based on the research of Joel Gilbert. But it's also based on the actual physical characteristics of Barack Obama's face. He continues to carry a lot of the facial characteristics that his real father, Frank Marshall Davis, had as an adult man, meaning the facial tags, the mannerisms. I recall seeing Barry one day. He had the only afro I had ever seen as a youth growing up in Hawaii, because we didn't have access to a lot of African Americans. It was definitely a real afro. Now, you have to understand that I worked at Kaneohe Marine Corps Air Station, which had a lot of enlisted African Americans, but they had very short hair. They wore wigs on the weekends, and so there was a real difference. So I remembered him, seeing him there. Barry lived with his grandparents in Honolulu near Punahou School, which he attended. As he became famous and ran for president, I started researching him because his birthday is August 4th and mine is August 5th. And I thought, well, he probably was born either in one of the two main maternity hospitals. I thought maybe he was born at Queen Kapi'olani or Liahi Hospital. But as I researched, none of these hospitals would admit that he was born there. So I started researching more and more, and we came to the conclusion that I'm not sure whether he was born in the United States or not, and I'll tell you why not. I believe that Frank Marshall Davis, who I believe is his real father, was... how should I put it? Barack Obama's mother, Stanley Ann Dunham, got pregnant by her father's surveillee for the CIA. Stanley Dunham, the father, Stanley Armour Dunham, worked for the CIA and came and visited Frank Marshall Davis quite a bit because he surveilled him for the CIA. Frank Marshall Davis was a registered communist that worked and wrote for the local union paper. And his daughter, Stanley Ann, or Ann Dunham, got pregnant by his surveillee, Frank Marshall Davis. And when that happened, he would have lost his job. Totally lost his job if they found out his grandson or his grandson-to-be was the son of his surveillee. He would have lost that. So he went, I believe, to extraordinary lengths to trick his employer, the CIA, that Barack Obama had a different father. He recruited Barack Hussein Obama Sr. from Africa, where Sr. was an agent, a CIA agent, on their payroll. And grandfather arranged for Sr. to come to Hawaii for only a semester so he could stand in as the father for this child, Barack Obama Jr. And he never married Anne. He never married the daughter. Even though many newspaper articles and many magazine articles will claim he did. He did not. He was married to someone else in Africa. And here in Hawaii, Frank Marshall Davis was married to his second wife, Helen Canfield, at the time. He had five children by her. one of the reasons that I believe that Grandfather Dunham wanted to fool his employer was because he depended on that employment, and he wanted a believable facade around the birth of this child, including perhaps also having him born in Kenya, where Grandmother Obama would have watched it, according to the Kenyan custom. Now, until I found just recently, from 1991 to 2007, Barack Obama's official biography said that he was born in Kenya. And then in 2007, they changed it to Hawaii. The woman who released the birth certificate, Loretta Fuddy, who was at that time director of the Department of Health for Honolulu, mysteriously died shortly after this. She died of supposedly an irregular heartbeat. Now, she died in a plane accident. Now you think, in a plane accident? Well, that seems like that would be believable, she died in a plane accident, until you understand that the pilot and seven other passengers were able to exit this small little plane, put on life jackets, float in the water, and survive until people came and rescued them. One of the passengers even swam to shore, where he alerted others that they needed help. She had been conversing with people with her life jacket on, and yet she died as a result, they say, of heart problems. Now, one of the things that I find interesting is that the coroner of record, after all the autopsies are done, is the chief of police of the island of Molokai. So I find that a little bit unusual. One of the other things I find interesting is that Mr. Obama, as a youth, meaning when he was in college, stated in video, and you can still find it on the web, that he was born in Kenya. You can watch him stating, I believe it was while he was at Columbia, that he stated he was born in Kenya, came from Kenya. And we all know that Barry, he could have been born in a number of other places, but I still believe that he was born possibly, most likely in Kenya. There's a birth certificate with a baby's footprint from Kenya, reportedly that his Kenyan relatives verify. And I believe that the woman, the director of health for the Hawaii Department of Health, was possibly murdered because she knew the truth of his birth certificate, that she knew that it was not a valid birth certificate. I noticed that the birth certificate, when they show it, is different than my birth certificate. And it has things listed that wouldn't have been listed at the same time. Let's see. Another woman by the name of Nancy Ruth Owens claims to be the one who manipulated the computer to fake the birth certificate. She reportedly confessed to the FBI that she was the one who manipulated the birth certificate to produce a fake birth certificate that was then put on the White House website. I think when you look at Barack Obama, most people look at his real father, Frank Marshall Davis, and say, well, Frank Marshall Davis was a registered communist. That explains Barack Obama. But I say that's only the tip of the iceberg. You need to look at who his grandparents were, both grandmother and grandfather, the CIA agents. These were the early days, 1960s. These were the early days of the OSS or the CIA. and you need to examine their background. How was the CIA or the OSS at that time formed? And there are probably, I've found at least 20, at least 15 different books talk about George Herbert Walker Bush, as well as Otto Skorzeny and Reinhard Gehlen involved in the early days of the OSS. Now, Mr. Bush, previous president, George Herbert Walker Bush, wasn't always even a Bush. He wasn't born in the USA. He was born in Berlin, Deutschland. And he happens to be, according to Otto Skorzeny, who was Hitler's bodyguard. And Otto Skorzeny kept photographic evidence of all the people in Hitler's circle. And George Herbert Walker Bush was one of the relatives of Hitler. He was, according to Otto Skorzeny, a first cousin. Now, Obama's grandparents, the Dunhams, were recruits to the CIA. And they're reportedly, I found several different references, 6th, 7th, 10th cousin to George Bush, whose real name was George Hugo Waldemar Scherf. And that I found it on Ancestry.org, the Mormon website. I found it on several other websites that indicated he was a relative, a 10th cousin or a 6th cousin or a 7th cousin. That's when it gets interesting, because Otto Skorzeny and Reinhard Gehlen formed and recruited intelligence agencies, Stasi from Germany, and Nazi war criminals. And this is the CIA that Barry Obama's grandparents worked for. Grandfather Dunham surveilled communist Frank Marshall Davis. And in the early days of the OSS CIA, they drummed up that the real issues in the world after defeating Nazi Germany was the communists and the communist plot to take over the world. So it is highly likely that because the Dunhams were brought to this country by Otto Skorzeny, Reinhard Gehlen, and others, it is highly likely that they were either German Nazi or in some way related to the intelligence agencies there. Now, Grandmother Dunham volunteered at the probate court in Honolulu. She worked her way up from being a bank clerk, where she worked, to being a bank vice president. And then, as part of her release time from her bank position, she went down to the probate court, which was not that far away, just several blocks, where she had access to the Social Security numbers of many dead persons whose estates were being settled in the probate court. This OSS propaganda machine had told the American people that the CIA brought over 1,500 or 1,600 German Nazi scientists to build the A-bomb or the atomic bomb. And I've sat with the daughter of one of these Nazi scientists and conversed about some of the practices that they did. And she's confirmed to me that they did bring over that many. But what they don't tell you, what the Hollywood propaganda machine does not tell you, is that they brought over 50,000 German Stasi and their families during the same period, from 1945 to approximately 1960. Ronald Reagan was, as the head of the Screen Actors Guild, he was responsible for bringing in these German Stasis and fundraising in Hollywood to bring them in and their families, because it was expensive. Rockefellers and others helped pay for it. You can find some of this information in some of the CIA books that they have published online. One book, Eagle and Swastika, CIA and Nazi War Criminals and Collaborators. Other books that are online, and other books that have been published talk about how Alan Dulles, who was head of the OSS or CIA, and the SS preserved each other. America actually became a safety man. In order to understand why this is so important, you have to understand that during World War II, many, if not all, of the war prisoners from North Africa and Europe were sent to the U.S. and held in concentration camps in 48 of the 50 states. And they did not tell the American public that they did this, but they brought large numbers of war criminals, up to, I believe it was close to 200,000 war criminals, were held in this country before they were released at the end of World War II or returned to Germany and Italy, a few from Italy. And if I don't recall anything about the war criminals that came from Japan. However, you have to understand that this is the background on Mr. Obama's Caucasian side. They are related to the German Stasi that were the early recruits to the OSS-CIA. And this is indeed suppressed history because many Americans were told lies about this. And we can even, and they are, the Hollywood media machine is composed of many of these individuals. I met some of them publicly. Some of them hung up on me when I called them to complain about some of the falsehoods that were on the radio. Because when you call them out on the untruths that they're actually stating, they dislike it. And so many of them will hang up on you, or they will do things to you to shut you out. Patriotic Americans after 9/11 were labeled domestic terrorists. Who labeled them domestic terrorists? The intelligence agencies, the people on the watch. People were put on the watch list because they were patriotic. The son of George Bush, Bush Jr., told us to not rely on conspiracy theories. Why? Because guess what? 9/11 is not a conspiracy theory. It was an act that was done against the people of the United States because Americans don't go to war easily. Mr. Obama's cousin, distant cousin, is George Bush Jr. Daddy Bush, George Bush, and he kept the same cabinet as George Bush after he took office. I find that interesting. Why? They're related. They have the same agenda. Now, the agenda that I believe they have is the destruction of this country, and that's why they were willing to do 9/11. I'm not saying specifically who did it, because I think we still can examine that. I think Barbara Honegger and Jim Mars did some research on that. I believe that the Project for the New American Century certainly evidences some of that premeditated war. And I believe that their loyalties to the Nazi ideals and against patriotic Americans who are loyal to the Constitution is evident. Something that I've observed that I have not seen anywhere except in one location. Many of these who work in the intelligence agencies now are children of these Stasi, 50,000 Stasi that were recruited to this country by Otto Skorzeny and Reinhard Gehlen under the auspices of Alan Dulles. Alan Dulles and his brother John Foster Dulles, who was at that time Secretary of State, brought in and were able to bring in 50,000 of them, including their families. And they continue working against the American people, in my estimation. I've talked with a number of them, but they're not candid. they just tell you, oh, you're wrong. Or, you know, when you discover something and you tell them, and you look at them like, oh, my gosh, I don't sound like an American. You don't sound very patriotic because of what they're telling you. Many of them receive possibly two paychecks, one for their regular employment, their government employer, or employment or other deception, and a second second from the secret government. It's not really a check. What it is their funds, secret funds are funneled to them. Bills are paid online for them. For example, when Sandy Hook occurred, the NSA, Eric Holder, Barack Obama sent letters, NSA letters, to every single family in the 25-mile region around Sandy Hook, warning them that they were not to talk with the media. And when they didn't, a year later and a week or so on Christmas Day, every single person in that Newtown area of Sandy Hook received 100% payment of their mortgage in full. Their mortgage was paid in full for not talking to me. Yeah, that's a big, huge payoff. But these children of the Stasi that came in received proceeds from drug trafficking, child and human trafficking, pedophilia, pornography, prostitution, any number of other things, money laundering, and they get paid. I've had several of them talk in front of me in candid, not openly saying that that's how they're receiving money, but hinting that they're receiving money for other services. And I believe that many of the intelligence agencies and the Department of Justice are filled with these individuals who I call Stasi diaper babies. People such as McCabe, Brennan, Clapper, Rosenstein, Strzok. Mr. Comey, in his book, talked about higher loyalty. Well, what higher loyalty is there than the U.S. Constitution unless you have another loyalty? I don't know what Mr. Comey's other loyalty is. It should be to the U.S. Constitution and the rule of law. The big secret, I think, about Mr. Obama is that he's currently head of the government, that he took over from Daddy Bush. I use a research service, and on this research service, it indicates that President Trump is president of the United States of America, and Barack Obama is president of the government of the United States of America today. And that makes me wonder, what is Mr. Obama doing to undermine the vote, to undermine President Trump, to undermine the American Democratic Republic, to undermine the Constitution? I see it in actions in other governments, in local government, judges. We saw it with the IRS weaponization under Mr. Obama and his auditing of his political enemies. Civil asset forfeiture without any criminal conviction is a deprivation of property. When George Bush talked about free speech zones, I thought we had free speech period, not free speech zones. Censorship of conservatives on social media with Google and YouTube. Not so subtle disenfranchisement with electronic voting machines. It seems to me that they have a whole different value system and that the end justifies the means in their minds. And I'm very disturbed about this hubris that Mr. Obama or Mr. Bush or any of them may think that they have a right to be our rulers. when every citizen, no citizen should be above another. I believe that this group of individuals, the 50,000 that came to this country after World War II from about 1945 to 1960, is indeed a very dangerous group, very dangerous Trojan horse group that are working to overthrow the country. I do believe that Mr. Obama is over them, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ran Michelle Obama for the 2020 presidential candidate. I wouldn't be surprised at all. She's been speaking at church conferences and other conventions since he...
In terms of, yes. for time's sake, can you try to wrap it up in the next couple of minutes?
I'm already ready. All I'm ready to say is I believe that we need to be actively pursuing helping President Trump and weeding out every individual that appears to be depriving us of civil liberties. And that this army, this Trojan horse army, is huge, up to 1 million people, and that we need to be actively involved as patriots against this. And I think the 9/11 Truth Movement is one of the excellent ways of doing this. And that's the end of what I'm going to say.
Oh, all right. Thank you, Joanne. Let's put it into Q&A mode. Another question for Joanne. And while we're waiting for people to sign up for that, Joanne, I just wanted to ask you, do you have any, like, how could I find out the evidence where it shows that all these homes were paid, the mortgages were paid around Sandy Hook? I live in Connecticut, so I'm kind of curious about that. Can you point me in a direction to some information on that? Or? Oops, you're muted. Sorry, Joanne. Now you're muted.
But it's characteristic of the kinds of things that I've seen, because I've been around. I started keeping a list of people about 3 years ago, 4 years ago now, that I thought might be some of them because of some of the clues they gave to me. And on a trip from Los Angeles to Honolulu via plane, I had a man take my keys out of my purse and backpack on the floor and go into my apartment and break my computer, where I had a list of about 135 individuals listed from my encounters with them in Hawaii and California, which I found very interesting that happened. I've also been threatened publicly, but I will look that up for you and see whether I can locate that again, because that was a very interesting discovery. I think it may have been on one of the Steve Hilbig videos. I'm not 100% sure of that, though, so I would have to look back and check make sure.
All right, great. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. So we do have a few people with questions. The first one will be David Rold. David, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you, David.
Okay. So these people who were brought over from Germany to found the CIA were Nazis, but then later in your presentation you called them Stasi, and the Stasi was the East German anti-Nazi communist organization. And I think it's really important not to conflate those, that the communists were the good guys who were against the Nazis, and the U.S. and the Bush family were covertly supporting the Nazis against the communists in the war. And so I really liked a lot of the information you presented about Obama, but I think Trump is like part of this same cabal. He's like, you know, best friends with the Clintons, and he was brought in as part of this same program. And also the United States was like always run by these people, and there's like no like good United States we can go back to. We need to overthrow the United States. So
you know,
that's what I want to say.
I appreciate your perspective on that. I believe, based on, are you familiar with what is called reverse speech? David Oates, a researcher out of Australia, and reverse speech. It's another form of truth identification, or identification of what people are thinking in their subconscious mind. He has done significant research about how individuals learn to speak with their subconscious mind first, and then they learn to speak with their conscious mind. And you have to check that what people say with their subconscious mind is congruent with what they say in their conscious mind. Because if it's congruent, then you can know that they're not telling the truth. Trump is imperfect, as any human is. I believe is actually working to try to help the country, get the country back. I'm not saying he's perfect. I'm not saying he's not had some dealings with these individuals. All I'm saying is that I think he's doing a better job at wresting the deep state out. Not perfect. I would have done things. Who knows? He's being attacked from every angle. But I do think it is his sincere desire to bring the country back. And sincere or not, it doesn't mean that people aren't blackmailing him or his family. I don't know, but I do know that his subconscious or unconscious speech was congruent with what he was saying consciously when it was assessed and tested by David Oates and his group out of Australia. Whereas when Hillary, when her speech was tested, it said that she was scamming. She was telling people that she was scamming them. You have to really do a deep assessment. And I can't say for sure that Trump is or not. I'm not saying that he's not been, they haven't attempted to blackmail him. I don't know, because none of us know 100% of what goes on. We can only put together a scenario of what we view and what we assess. And I liked the assessment of Oates because it was a different type of truth verification. And I think his intent is good. I don't know whether it's as effective as he intended it to be.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I see Trump doing the same thing as all the other presidents. And, you know, they blackmail every president, even though they're already on board with the project. Like, Bill Clinton was on board with this Nazi project, but they still blackmailed him with the Monica Lewinsky thing and everything because they want to have safeguards to make sure that the presidents do what they're supposed to do. So,
well, I'm not surprised because they're totally control freaks, totally control freaks. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're attempting to do that. I think that President Trump has the support of the military. There's a lot that's kept out of the news. We have to really dig to find out things that are happening because they're not broadcast in the mainstream media. I don't know that people are aware that President Trump's had several attempts on his life already, and his family also.
Okay. David, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thank you, David. Okay, next is Malcolm Arnold. Malcolm, go ahead.
Yes, this is Malcolm Arnold. I was curious that you said that Barack Obama is currently president, and you used a phrase, maybe it was government of the United States, but I'm kind of curious, and you made the distinction versus Trump. Are you speaking of admiralty law, emergent law, where there's a corporation of the United States and he's the president of a corporation of the United States? And if so, can you elaborate on that difference in how you see it?
I'm not speaking of the admiralty, although I am interested in learning more and differentiating the two. What I am speaking of is a senior executive service and that influence. When Mr. Obama was president, he went in and he appointed about 8,000 individuals as second in command under the senior executive service. And they back up and run. Now, the directors are supposedly all appointed by the president. But the second in command is still someone appointed by President Obama. And President Trump, to my dismay, has not reappointed people in the second in command of the senior executive service. And there are many instances where we can see, even in today, or with some of the dealings with, was it Nicaragua or El Salvador, where they were at odds, the State Department was at odds with what President Trump had ordered. And that comes from individuals inside the agency or the senior executive service, second in command, who could be working against President Trump at the directive of Mr. Obama. And I say that not because I gave Mr. Obama that title. That's a title I got from a research service.
Okay.
And I didn't give him that title. I would have called him a former President Obama. I wouldn't call him the President of the Government of the United States of America. I certainly don't believe he should be the President of the Government of the United States unless he's currently head of the Fourth Reich. If he is, he's certainly deceived us for a long time.
Malcolm, are you all set, or is there more you want
to say? Yeah, given the information that you've researched, what would be the best documentary or information that you would recommend for those who want to read or watch about this? And also, have you done any research on Obama's connection while he was at Columbia University to Brigny Zabrinsky and the connections there?
I have not researched his time at Columbia. The only thing that I've gotten from the time he was at Columbia was the talk that he gave where he indicated he was born in Kenya. And you can see the video of it. It's online. I forget where I found it online, but it is online, where he officially says he was born in Kenya. And he says it. You can hear it in his own voice. That's the only thing that I have. I haven't really researched that particular timeline, although I think it would be very interesting. I'm done with that answer.
Okay. Malcolm, you're all set?
Yes, there was no documentaries or any information to research what you're saying
yes.
As far as the birther stuff, as far as for people who want more information.
Okay, there are a lot of books that have been written about this. I am not alone in my opinion about this. Trevor Lowden and Rodney Stubbs wrote a book, Barack Obama and the Enemies Within, Webster Griffin Tarpley, Obama, the Postmodern Coup, Making of a Manchurian Candidate. Aaron Klein wrote the book, The Manchurian President, Barack Obama's Ties to Communists, Socialists, and Other Anti-American Extremists. So, and there's I have a list of at least 15 to 20 different books about the early CIA, Alan Dulles, John Foster Dulles, and the Nazis and the Stasi, and how they were recruited.
Okay, Malcolm, all set?
Thank you, yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Next question is from Kat McGuire. Go ahead, Kat.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. My comment is that I get concerned when I hear all of this Nazi stuff. That's not to say Operation Paperclip didn't happen, but especially now, it very much dovetails with the weaponization of this white supremacist political identity that is going on, neo-Nazi. And I encourage all of us to really look at World War II history. It's pretty much 180 from what we've been taught. And a final comment before I ask my question is, if we're going to look at anything in our government and which outsiders are embedded deeply within, I suggest we look very close at Israeli firsters. And my question then is, I've been onto Otto Scorsese for a while and find that really interesting that he has revealed George Bush as actually being a German. So what I never quite could understand is how could this German George Bush be inserted into a family that has a legacy going back several generations and a public presence, and how do you just insert this person into that? I don't disbelieve it, but it's hard to believe as well. So if you could speak to that, please, I would appreciate it.
Okay. Well, part of my research, I went to the German Genealogical Society in Burbank, California. And because I have some German in my background, I pretended to be a granddaughter of George Scherf. And the old German woman who was manning the library that day, the German Genealogical Library, took me on a wild goose chase for about half an hour. And then she said to me, "There are privacy laws in this country, my dear." And I knew that she knew who George Scherf was. And she was absolutely correct that there are privacy laws. I have a number of friends. I have one friend who is the daughter of her parents, anyway, escaped from Nazi Germany on the rat line to South America. And she has a light accent. George Bush must have worked very hard to erase that light accent. He came as a young teen. The earlier you come and the earlier you expose to a language, the less of an accent you have. And that is why. And I believe that the father of George Bush is... German is very close to English in some respects, and many individuals in Wall Street both worked in Germany and on Wall Street, so they had to go. They went back and forth. The Dulles brothers worked in both Germany and the United States. They developed a fluency with the languages. And we're able to pass. The earlier you learn a language, the better you are without an accent.
Okay, Kat, are you all set with that or anything else?
That's all I can tell you right now, because I could go, I don't think we need to get into the linguistics of it. It involves development of the brain, and the brain has to hear certain language tones and sounds at an early age. And the earlier you hear all those tones and sounds, the easier it becomes to reproduce them.
Well, that seems easy for him to insert. I'm thinking more in terms of the receiving family, vis-a-vis their neighbors, vis-a-vis just within the family, to have this stranger inserted into her whole history, and if her neighbors to go along with it, it wasn't like he was birthed there. So I just found that all weird, not that George was able to pull it off. That
no,
is incredible, the whole language thing.
His whole family came. It wasn't him alone. His whole family came.
Oh, in his generation they came? In George Bush's generation?
His parent, his mother and his father came. Barbara Bush came. A whole group.
I don't know. The Bushes have been around for many generations, and you're saying one
I'm saying he wasn't born in this country. I'm not saying that the Bushes, which is the adopted name, hasn't been around in this country for a long time. You forget that I said that the original name, the name of birth, Scherf, S-H-E-R-F. That is the name birth in Berlin. Bush, you can insert the name and take the information from others that were there before. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm done, sure.
Okay, thank you, Kat. Okay, next, Sherry, you're next.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much for coming on our call. You have some really good information, especially about Sandy Hook. I've never really studied that much. But what I wanted to let you know about, in case you didn't, is what happened back in 1967 when the Supreme Court let only Israel hold dual nationality for some reason. While Washington claims it has a good neighbor policy with Mexico, the U.S. did not permit Mexicans to hold dual nationality. The U.S. makes them become either U.S. or Mexican. You can't be both. But the U.S. and its special relationship with Israel has become very sympathetic to allowing Israel Americans to retain two nationalities and allowing U.S. citizens not only to hold public office in Israel, but to hold U.S. government positions as well. No other country holds a special exception to our laws of citizenship. Now, this violates Section 401E of the Nationality Act and other very important national security codes that demand 100% United States citizenship, because that ensures allegiance to the United States of America. And so starting in 1967, dual nationals with Israel started to literally infiltrate all of our government, all of our halls of justice, and just about everything else you can think of. And that's what's happened now. And you got lists and lists and lists of people. And all you need to know is one story. Rabbi Dov Zakheim. How in the hell did he get to be the comptroller of the United States Pentagon, which demands only 100% U.S. citizenship? Right? And what was he? His side job, CEO of Systems Planning Corporation, that makes the remote control flight termination systems on those jets. So the main culprit is Israel. And Mr. Trump, on 9/11, was recorded on the radio right after the towers had fallen and Building 7 had not yet. And he spoke more lucid than he ever has since. And he said, there's no way those jets took those towers down. Those buildings were so strong, and he went into a fairly detailed description of the outside of the steel of those buildings and how bombs had been there before, and there had to be bombs. And that was the only time I've heard the creature talk lucid. Then 2 days later, he's interviewed on 9/13 on a German reporter on TV, and he flips like a pancake, and he completely parrots the original story. Now, you can listen to both of them. They're both still on YouTube. And he flipped. Now, somebody got to him. Did they offer him a position of high power to shut up about bombs? Well, I definitely think so. He shut up, and he's the president. So he, if you watch Adam Green with No More News, he triangulates his facts. And Donald Trump says, my first love is Israel. He says those exact words, and he says his loyalty is to Israel, and they have a minting coins of all types of metals with his face on it, and they're naming communities after him, and the Third Temple is what they is going to pretty much, you know, rule the world over there. And if you watch Adam Green, all the technology, who's patrolling our border right now? An Israeli drone right now. Why isn't American drones patrolling our border? So I'll just end on that note, but I would encourage you to watch Adam Green with No More News, because he's really nailing them on the head with what's going on. Thank you.
Yeah. Right. Thank you, Sherry. Yep.
I am disturbed about a lot of what the Israelis are doing, because the rat line out of Nazi Germany went to South America. It went to this country, large numbers, 50,000, and it also went to Israel. They're hiding among the people that they persecuted. And so I do think many, many believing Jews realize that this Zionism is nothing more than Nazism. And I agree that there is a problem with that. There's a major problem with that. And
well,
that's
no
all I'll
is allowed to hold dual nat- you can't, you know, how did Rabbi Dov Zakheim get to be the comptroller of the Pentagon, you know?
That's
I mean,
a problem.
That's,
I agree.
You know, and,
I agree.
And he had stolen okay. $2.3 trillion the day before, and that money was never recovered, and the office investigating him was the office that was bombed at the Pentagon. I mean, all you got to do is connect the dots back to its the Zionists, they got us. They just came to the church down the street from me. An Israeli defense captain sniper came to New Song Christian Church. And we all snuck in there with Adam Green and Mike Cheeky. And it was the scariest thing I've ever done, to hear people up on a church with Marines. I'm at Camp Pendleton. And they've got them all brainwashed into thinking it's okay to genocide Palestine.
Okay. All right, Sherry.
You know, I'll be quiet, but it's pretty, we all need to be on the same page with it, in my opinion. So.
Okay, Joanne, do you have any response to that?
Or are you there's a lot that I believe is hidden, because they keep it hidden from us. It's part of the deception. And I do believe a lot of this Zionist movement is another term for Nazis, or the National Socialist. I just don't know enough about the Israeli involvement to speak to it. I believe it's there. I believe some of it is Mr. Trump is deceived. Not all of it. I don't know how much he's deceived and how much he's just playing along. But I do think he is doing many things trying to help patriots in this country. That's not to say that he's perfect. That's not to say that he's not blackmailed. That's not to say that he's not succumbed in some areas.
All right.
You know, that's all I can say.
All right. Thank you very much, Joanne, for being on our call tonight and for presenting that fascinating, interesting information. And yeah, and you're welcome to stay and listen to, we have another speaker and then some announcements, so you're welcome to stay with us and or not, depending on whatever you want to do.
Thank
okay.
you. Thank you.
Okay. And next we're going to hear from Kat McGuire, and Kat is going to be talking about the book, David Icke's new book, The Trigger, The Lie That Changed the World, Who Really Did It and Why. And Kat doesn't need any introduction. She's been on this call for a long time. So, Kat, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Cheryl. Well, I have to say, when I saw that, well, maybe a speaker is needed, but, well, what the heck, I'll stand up, step up, and talk. And I have started reading David Icke's book, and I feel it's a really important one for us because of his stature and reach of this person who is talking about 9/11. In terms of from a truth perspective, I think he is the biggest known person to address this. Now, I have to put a little disqualifier here. I'm only a fourth of the way through the book. It's an 800-page book.
So it's not like I'm the be-all, end-all. I hope when more of us read it, then maybe we can have a better discussion. But as I'm reading it and as there's a vacant place, let me, I'm just speaking. So one thing about the fact that it's a huge book, it's a virtual doorstop, is that a lot of people have asked me as I carry it around, boy, that's the biggest book I've ever seen. And it has opened up conversations. So I've kind of enjoyed that. One thing I'm kind of disappointed with, and I can't really blame David Icke for this, is that I don't think that we have many books that are really doing deep journalism and research. And I wouldn't think of that except for I'm active in the JFK research community. And there's many, if you will, boots on the ground reporting going on. There are people who have just focused on the limousine that Kennedy rode in, and they know everything about that, or the people who just know about the elevator at the Texas Book Depository. And it feels to me like, I may be wrong, please correct me, but there's a paucity of actual real niche, almost, research to fill out the entire story. And David Icke's book is sort of another one of these, sort of gathering together of what is already there online. I wish somebody would go interview some of these people, the ones who were supposedly on the planes and lived. Or there's a lot of interviewing opportunities, and he didn't do that. I can't fault him, but who is doing that? I'd like to know. Another point I'd like to make about his book is some people of our community he has definitely tapped. Chris Berlin is there, Barbara Honegger, and Sander Hicks. So that's really exciting. Obviously, David Ray Griffin and others. But this is our direct community, and I'm really pleased about that, especially Chris Berlin, because of his focus and the fact that he has been so vilified and that David Icke has embraced him. And I will get to that in a moment. A big disappointment is that there's an index and a bibliography, but there are no footnotes. It makes it virtually impossible to give this book to professional or scholarly people who are not part of the chorus. Without those footnotes, it's almost dead in the water. And that's just very disappointing and frustrating. How can he do that? How can there are others who are doing that? It's not right. Because it denies us an opportunity to really spread this work far and wide because it is not footnoted and sourced properly. I've seen David Icke on two videos now, so you might want to check those out. The one that I find a little more mainstream, if you will, is his debut one. I think he did that on September 11th to the biggest audience, and that was Brian Rose's London Reel. So you can look that up on YouTube. And he mostly talks about 9/11. But he does get into the real controversy of this book beyond 9/11, as if 9/11 were not enough. And you can see that in Adam Green, who's on No More News. Adam was the proud recipient of an interview with David Icke. And in that, David gets into part two of his book. He claims that the book is really two distinct books. The first one is about, the first part is about 9/11, and he blows the official story to pieces. And the second part, which is towards the end, and as I said, I'm only a fourth of the way through, but I've seen these two videos. The second part is about who did it. And he is definitely putting a stake in the ground. And he is definitely pointing to what he calls ultra Zionists. He's very careful not to say Jews, even says Jews should read his book. He goes down the path that there's a group of people who have hijacked Judaism, and they're the ones who have taken over and done 9/11, among other heinous things going on in the world today. So I'm very anxious to get to that part. But his interview with Adam Green was fascinating because he goes into it. He definitely talks about the protocols and believes that they were there. This whole concept of a forgery is sort of a false flag. And not only does he refer to them as ultra-Zionists, but as Sabbatean Frankists. So he goes into the whole Sabbatai Zevi angle, that they're a satanic cult and have carried through from the 1600s, actually from Babylonia, which is where Sabbatai Zevi picked it up from. But Sabbatai Zevi from the 1600s, and then the Frankists from the 1700s, the Dunme he discusses, and the crypto Jews in Turkey, and the Muslim Brotherhood, and all the way up to today. And he's saying these ultra-Zionists are satanic cults, and that they, people like the Rothschilds have hijacked Jews. They look like Jews, but they're not really Jews. So part of me is like, there is truth to that. But another part of me is, well, if it looks like a duck and talks like a duck and quacks like a duck, I think it's a duck. But at this point, just the fact that he's even stating that people of the Jewish Zionist persuasion are behind a lot of this is really quite extraordinary, above and beyond him tackling. He did tackle 9/11 in like 2002, but this is a whole new ballgame. In part because he has been targeted by them. One thing I found fascinating is I don't think there's a 9/11 book out there that has in the index at least a 2-inch long listing of pages to read about the Holocaust. So boy, oh boy, I can't wait till I get to the second half and see what he's going to do with that. So far, I have not seen any countering to this book, but maybe they're just sharpening their knives, or it's taken them a while to read it too. But even on YouTube, why has he not? Why is this extraordinary understanding of 9/11 that goes into the whole Zionist angle, which most people will hardly touch at all? They're very content with the Saudis as being the ultimate victims. Why have any of his YouTubes not been taken down? Some people would say, well, he's a gatekeeper. And the fact that he's still up, and maybe the worst damage that he's doing is attaching the whole Jewish angle to 9/11, the Zionist angle, which will totally wipe out any credibility for his alternative 9/11, not the official story. So people might say that is part of his gatekeeping. The minute you do that, you know that you're destroyed. But I would say to that, well, it just in what he's saying about 9/11, anybody who reads that first part and doesn't even get to the second part in this big, thick book, that alone is going to really shift consciousness for people. He, because of his stature, and he, it's a big book. He has it all right there. And also, knowing what he personally has gone through, he's been highly censored himself. Now, maybe that's just play acting. I know there are people who think Julian Assange is still in prison as part of a big play acting thing too. He's really working for them or whatever. I would like to say that David Icke, I felt was real. I had an opportunity. I'm just going to wrap up with this, that I had a personal opportunity to meet him this past May. He was on a world tour and he was pretty much banned for life from Australia. And so that opened up two or three appearances that he wasn't expecting in the U.S., and he came to New York, and I was able to go and see him, and he was really gracious and was standing there taking pictures. Obviously, it's a promotional effort, but so I'll get in line, because what happened in L.A. was he sent out in the morning where his talk was going to be. This was this past May, and by 7 p.m. when the talk was, by 5 p.m. he had been shut down. They had already called the theater. His Zionist enemies had called the theater and had gotten him shut down. And I can't remember if he was able to speak elsewhere in a hurry. They found some place. I don't know. But when he came to New York several days later, they weren't taking any chances. So those of us who had tickets, we got an email that morning. I remember sending them questioning, where is the show? When is the show? That morning, we got an email saying at 5 o'clock, they will tell us via text where David Icke is going to speak, because he has been that hounded. He's been shut down in England. So at 5 o'clock, the text came, and they said, meet at this corner in Midtown Manhattan, right outside Carnegie Hall, and somebody there will tell you. So it was hush-hush, and I don't think there was anything theatrical about it. We already saw what happened in L.A., and so when I had my turn to talk to him, he put his arm around me, and he's all smiles because he's a pro to take the picture, and I took the opportunity directly into his ear to say exactly what happened to him happened to us in New York. Yes? Cheryl Curtis and I put on a program for the Left Forum. We had to call it the Left Out Forum. And we couldn't tell anyone who had the tickets, we couldn't post where we were going to be until an hour before the program started, because we were being harassed by Zionists. And I told him directly that while he's smiling for the camera, I said, this is what happened to us. They shut us down. Then we had another event with Chris Bolin. They shut us down. It was really bad. And as I walked away after my 2 seconds of having the picture, I'm like, oh, God, what did I just say? You know, he's probably thinking, oh, he's trying to do his promotional stuff. He kind of not grabbed me, but sort of tapped and held my shoulder. And I turned around, and he had such an intense look of seriousness of somebody who likewise has been through the ringer. And he said, I know what is happening. I said, you can't imagine what we went through. He goes, yes, I do. And I'm going to write about it. And in September, I'm coming out with a book. And he looked at the crowd. There was a whole line still wanting pictures. And he looked at me. And I just felt like he really wanted to talk more, but he couldn't. He had his professional glad-handing duties to do. But I was like, is he really going to write? Because that was all I talked about, was these Zionist Israeli firsters to him. And he was really serious. He wanted to really know. He was taking them on, come hell or high water. And it wasn't until it came out, he said in September, it's like, oh, my God, he's tackling 9/11 as well. So that's a personal thing. Maybe he snookered me. I don't know, maybe this is all just a double front, but I would like to be on record that I think it's highly important that he has taken it on, and I think he personally has suffered a lot, and it has been fake, and those are my opinions, and I hope we all can read this big tome of a book and have a discussion on this conference call in the coming months. So thank you so much, Cheryl, for letting me speak during this time period.
Okay, Kevin. Thank you for being willing to do it, because we did have the spot, and it helps to have someone. So we really appreciate you. And I'm also reading that book, and I find it fascinating. There's a lot of information, things that I didn't know. So let me just put it into Q&A here. And actually, we're still in Q&A. So if anyone would like to speak, you just press *6 if you have a question for Kat. And one of the things, while we're waiting for people to sign up, I read in there the part about Bobby Kennedy Jr. and that after JFK died, he hired through the he had a friend in the MI6. What's that? And he had a friend in the MI6, and they hired some French intelligence agents to find out who killed his brother. And he got that report 3 days before he was killed. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I didn't know any of that.
Yeah.
It's that kind of book with a lot of stuff in it. So okay, let's see. We have Joanne. Joanne with a question. Joanne, go ahead.
I wanted to ask you. It's Kat, right?
Yes.
Hey, Kat. Have you ever looked at the physical similarities between John D. Rockefeller and David Icke? Physically. They look like they're the same person. Also,
Jim Mars physically looks like the son of David Rockefeller. Joe Arpaio. I can't tell you the name of the son. I've forgotten. Joe Arpaio also looks like a Rockefeller. Not Margaret Thatcher. I'm not remembering the name of Madeline Albright looks like the sister of David Rockefeller. I'm just giving you, asking you if you've ever looked at the physical appearance of people and wondered if they're related.
What I would say to that is, in terms of David Icke and Jim Mars, I have actually been up close, like a foot away from both of them. And I can't say that about the Rockefellers, but we have been saturated with so many pictures of them. And I don't find much of a resemblance, not that close enough that I would start saying, wow, you got to look at this, like you were saying, I think, with Barry. But the other thing is that there's so much advanced photoshopping now. They can even Photoshop videos that they can put out all kinds of stuff that would make you believe that. But having been in the personal presence of two of the people, you're saying, like, no, I don't see it.
Oh, okay. I appreciate you saying that. I'm just asking because the pictures that I've seen of John D. Rockefeller look a lot like David Icke. And the pictures I saw of one of the sons, I forget which one it was, of Jim Mars, he did look like one of the sons of David Rockefeller. That's why I asked if you'd ever looked at that similarity, the physiological similarity. And that's all. I was just curious.
Okay, thank you, Joanne. Okay, and next we have James Hufford. James, go ahead.
Well, this is James Hufford, and I've first of all, I would like to say that I ordered that book by David Icke on September 3rd, and I have yet to receive it, and eBay tells me that it's coming tomorrow. Well, we'll see, but it must have been sent from Timbuktu or someplace. I don't know why it would take over 3 weeks to get through the mail to me, but I'm still hoping. And the other thing is that Joanne gave me an article that she wrote that I'm going to post to the group that gives a lot of citations for a lot of her information. I don't know if all of it, but anyway, you can...
That'd be great.
A lot of it is well cited, so I'll send that out right after the call.
I would like to say I too waited and waited for my book, and I was so disappointed, and it finally came, and I've tried to stop everything so I could read it. I would like to think it's because they're inundated and there have been a lot of sales, but I don't know how we're going to find out. I guess maybe go to David Icke's site. We'll never know how much true sales there are, but hopefully it's because they're just inundated. So let's cross our fingers. That's what's going on.
Let's hope, yeah.
I got my book right away. So,
when did you order it?
I ordered it in, I think, late August, but they didn't come out until September 11th, and I got mine, like, I don't know, on the 12th or something. So, whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
Okay. James, are you all set?
Yep.
Okay. Thank you. All right. David Rold, you're next.
Hi, Kat. Can you hear me? I just wanted to thank you for getting on the call to talk about David Icke. He's been a big inspiration to me. Like on September 11th, 2001 was the day that I discovered David Icke's website and figured out that that 9/11 was an inside job because he was on top of it on that first day. And I went to see him speak in 2002. He speaks all day for 6 hours, and I saw him again in 2011, and he just inspired me to become an activist, a 9/11 truth and anti-war activist. And so I'll say that David Icke does present
a lot of information, and I agree with about 80% of his information, usually not everything. Like, sometimes I think he says, he like puts in some stuff that's just so far out that will make it so that people like don't take him seriously, so that he can get away with saying more things. I don't know, but I agree with most of it. I think he's a very important thinker and writer and activist, and it's also inspirational that he got out there and said what he thinks, even though people thought he was crazy and it destroyed his career that he had. That it's very brave of him and inspirational. And one of the things I don't agree with David Icke about is that he thinks the Chinese government is controlled by the Illuminati, and I think the Chinese government is like an anti-imperialist, anti-Illuminati government. But again, I do like agree with a lot of his analysis, especially about the Zionists doing 9/11 and about the nature of the wars in the Middle East and stuff. So I really appreciate that you got on the call to talk about David Icke. Thank you.
You're welcome, David. In part, so it was not just that I'm interested in and have just kind of want to bloviate a bit about it, but for promotion purposes, we have to put this out there because he's, well, a lot of people won't because of the Zionist angle, but he's the biggest person there who is going to be able to spread this. But also, David, with regards to your saying you don't believe like maybe 20% of it, because it's so outlandish and you think maybe that's he does that. I can't remember exactly what you said, but Barbara Honegger told me once that she thinks David Icke puts the whole reptilian thing out there as sort of a personal insurance policy. He's mm-hmm. too crazy that nobody's going to touch him as long as he has that, because if it was all just straight up 100% pure truth, the man would be way too dangerous and they'd have him put away just like Julian Assange right now.
Yeah, that's
okay,
what I meant, something like that.
Okay. All set. So there are no more questions at this point. So thanks a lot, Kat, for talking about that book. And I don't know if people are interested. You know, it's a long book, so maybe in a couple months or having it on the agenda as a sort of a discussion again. So we can talk about that and keep that in the back burner as a possibility. And all right. Thanks a lot, Kat. So now we're on to the... I'm sorry, what?
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay. And so now we're into the part about the announcements or updates from the 9/11 events and things that have been going on all this month. And I think how we'll handle that, rather than be in Q&A, is to, let me take everybody out of that, is to unmute everybody. So if you want to unmute yourself, go ahead. It's star 6. And then if you have something that you want to say, an announcement about, you know, an update on a 9/11 event, if you just kind of let me know, just say it, and then I'll make a list here because so we can all kind of talk back and forth without being in the Q&A mode. Is there any...
Cheryl, yeah. just to clarify for people, you're talking about events for the anniversary that have taken place as opposed
right.
to future events, just to clarify.
Right. Thank you, Craig. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm how do I try to unmute everybody, but let's see, does that do it? No. Oh.
Yeah, this is Barbara Honegger. I can tell you about Zurich.
Okay, Barbara. And so let me just get a list of who else. So Barbara, you're going to do your Zurich. Anyone else want to talk about anything?
Xander.
I think Xander?
Yep.
Okay, great. And then, Lynn, did you want to talk about Maine?
I will.
Okay. And anyone else have something they want to share? All right, well, let's start with those then, and if anyone thinks of anything, then just let me know. Okay, Barb, go ahead with the Zurichs, please.
Okay. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I wasn't sure. Just so you know, my voice may sound different. I've been sick with the flu or a cold, and I'm getting over it. So I may sound a little different. Anyway,
The Zurich event was held on September 11th in Zurich, Switzerland, of course. And I'm telling you, it was a magnificent success. It will not be long before everybody, I will send to the list the links to all the YouTubes of the presentation. I've already sent the link to the YouTube to Richard Gage's presentation, which was by remote link. But that'll give you, it won't really give you an idea about the event because his was by Skype or Zoom.us. And so it's not going to be the same as the videos of the in-person events in the theater. The venue was unbelievably perfect. It's a 900-seat theater, actually a concert hall, right in central Zurich. And we only asked for about 250 chairs to be put out because we didn't want to have 900 chairs and only have 200 people. We wanted to, you know, basically fill the audience chairs. And that happened. We had between 150 and 200 people. And you're able to see that in the video, that all the heads are there. I mean, it was a really good showing. Daniela Ganser was our keynote speaker, and Niels Herit was in person. Daniela Ganser was in person, who's the world's expert on the Operation Gladio, false flag attacks in Europe during the Cold War. And we, very exciting, well, of course, we had Richard Gage. We also had a good section on the Lawyers Committee. Mick Harrison, our litigation director, and our founding president, Jane Clark, were supposed to be on by Skype. Unfortunately, Mick was traveling to the West Coast to the Grand Lake Theater for the 9/11 Film Festival, where he spoke for about a half an hour and literally was held up in three major storms where cars were flying around. And one almost hit him. So he wasn't. What?
Was that you, Sherry, who said something? I don't know, Barbara. Well, let's continue.
Yeah, somebody made a comment that I couldn't hear. But anyway, Mick did survive the trip across the country. And but he wasn't able to be at the Zurich event by remote link, unfortunately. So Jane Clark, our founding president of the Lawyers Committee, and myself did that segment. And then we also had Ansgar Schneider, Dr. Ansgar Schneider, who amazingly, he was in person. And amazingly, he was his paper on the Twin Towers. What really happened at the Twin Towers on 9/11 had actually been accepted at a major conference in New York City that was held between the 4th and the 6th of September. But somebody in the State Department, the Trump State Department, did not authorize his visa, so he could not come. So as a result of that, we invited him to the Zurich event. We added him at the last minute when we learned about that. And he did come from, I believe, Germany, which isn't that far away. And he gave a summary of the presentation that he was going to give in New York City. so we had a number of other speakers, and you'll be able to see those. And we had a really good audience. We had over 550 live stream views as the event was happening. And there is an event website where all of the videos will be posted, hopefully in about a week. There were a lot of technical problems with the original video that was taken in the theater. And so Mark Snyder, my video editor, has had a real task that he's had to get around all of those glitches. But he's doing a really great job, and hopefully in about a week everything will be up and you'll have the link. So if anybody has a question, just let me know.
Anybody have a question or comment for Barbara?
Barb, Daniel Ganser, what was his speech talk about?
Daniela. I learned he pronounces it Daniela. Daniela Ganser's talk was on World Trade Center 7. And he basically focused on the Halsey Report and how what was important, I think, is that, to my surprise, he actually said this. He said, until the draft Halsey Report came out, I think it was on the 4th or the 6th of September, maybe the 3rd. Anyway, about a week before our event in Zurich on September 11th, he said, until the draft Halsey Report came out, he himself was not certain that fire, believe it or not, had not caused the collapse of World Trade Center 7. And after the Halsey Report came out, where the Halsey Report found that the Halsey analysis found that over 650 columns over 8 floors had to be removed effectively simultaneously to achieve in the simulation video the same effect as in the actual event video. That absolutely clinched it for him, and he's now actually published that controlled demolition brought down World Trade Center 7 and the Twin Towers. And he wasn't willing to be definitive before the draft Halsey Report came out. So that was really the main revelation of his talk.
Great. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay, anybody else?
Barbara, thank you for going and telling us about it. And travel is hard, and I hope you feel better very soon.
Oh, well, I didn't just go. I organized the event, produced the event, and paid for the event.
That's so much effort. We thank you.
Yeah, it was huge. It was huge. It was a four or five month effort. But I did have a wonderful co-organizer, Jan van Aken, who is the leader of the Europe-wide 9/11 Truth Movement. He was my co-organizer.
Yeah, Barbara, thank you really for letting us
know
about
it. What an accomplishment.
And then, yeah, and I'm glad you thought it was a magnificent success. That's good.
It was a great success, and the videos will show that. They'll be up soon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we look forward to it.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. And then, Xander, you wanted to tell us about an event?
Yeah, guys, I just want to let everybody know a couple things. First of all, AE, we had a pretty successful response from the Halsey Report. We had almost 5,000 people uniquely download the report within the first few days, so that's showing a good, strong response. I wanted to let everybody know I made an effort to really call members of Congress. I called every Arizona congressperson and senator and really actually got positive feedback from those staffers that I communicated with on the phone. So, you know, I think the veil is lifting a little bit. I've also wanted to let everybody know that I personally, by venturing outside of typical spheres in online communication, I'm noticing a lot more positive response in public venues like Twitter and other comment sections and news stories and other places. So that's good to know. I learned, just so you all know, that Reddit will censor your material if they don't like it, and they have folks, and you will never know that your stuff has been censored. So I figured that out by using a separate computer with its own unique IP. So just tuck that in your hat. With the one speaker, Joanna's presentation on the birth certificate stuff with Obama, evidence is available by Mike Zullo. He was Maricopa County Sheriff's Department investigator for Fraudulent Schemes Division. It's a great resource. If you look up Mike Zullo online, you can find out just facts and not speculation. And then the last thing is I just will share with everybody, I sent a letter to Attorney General Barr on Monday, a certified mail, because as it turns out, for better or worse, Barr was actually a really good friend of my father's. They worked together for about 20 years. In the Department of Justice. And so, you know, I just basically asked him to open an investigation and told him that it's our country really doesn't have another choice in my estimation, that disclosure is inevitable, and the sooner we get to it, the less damage will ultimately be done to our republic. So that's the gist of that letter. Oh, and then the last thing I really want to say is that with this Halsey stuff coming out, It is my assessment that we will likely at some point see folks talk about how, well, they decided that that building needed to come down later in the day and therefore went in and put in charges. And that's going to be a fallback for the traders. And the thing to remember if that comes about is that this building had been, they had been working on it from earlier in the day. You know, Jennings talked about all the pre-weakening stuff going on. The Nade footage shows damage within the building. So it wasn't a decision later in the day. This thing was rigged to go down just like the other ones. And so we need to remember that it wasn't some haphazard decision at the end, and let's not let them pass that off on us. That's all I've got. Oh, the last thing. Locally, here in Arizona, not a lot of outreach in the community, not a lot of events or things like that. I just think that stage of our work is done. But we really need to be hammering in on all of the great technical evidence that's available and speaking out and reaching directly to our universities and our fire departments to get things moving on official channels. So that's all I got.
All right. Thanks, Xander. And then anyone want to comment on anything Xander said or ask him a question?
Well, I have an idea. This is Sherry. Can you hear me?
Hey, sure. Yes, I sure can. Hi.
Well, I think that I just had an idea, maybe take it on the road like every other month to make six, like a tour of Mr. Gage and Barbara and the fire commissioner, you know, and the people that could tell the story and maybe go to different places in our country where there's good 9/11 groups, like here in San Diego, we would sponsor it, and have people come and have it be kind of a fundraiser at the same time, be an information to that section of the country. You know, maybe we could, work on something like that, like a little tour, six tour, you know.
That's a good idea. We had, when Gage came through with Eric Lawyer, we had a great turnout here in Phoenix. That was the last time he came through, I think. So, yeah, no, it's a good idea. There's a lot to hear. So if we could get speakers like Chris, Joya to come. That's the other thing. So I reached out real fast, guys. Let me tell you something else. I had a really positive response from structural engineers here in Arizona, and I think we're going to possibly get Halsey to be able to come out. So, Halsey, or at least some due diligence folks, something. But there's people are willing to hear the message these days.
Great. Okay, great.
I have a question. This is Ann. I have a question for Xander. Hi, awesome. Awesome work. Thank you so much. Awesome. Could you tell us more about what you wrote to Attorney General Barr? Did you provide information about what the Lawyers Committee has been working on, their progress, their actions also?
I'll tell you just a little bit about it. Here, I have a copy. I said, "Dearest AG Bill Barr, you were a friend of my late father, Drew Arena, and I know from many years of conversation that he thought the utmost of you. Watching the entirety of your confirmation hearings, I was reminded of Drew. He seemed to be a clear thinker and an honorable man." Now, caveat, pause the letter. I don't know about this guy. I can't vouch for him. He covered up Iran-Contra. I have no idea what this guy's like. I'm just going from my own experience of how my father thought of him. Anyways, back to the letter. "Given the belated connection, I would be remiss if I did not take an opportunity to relay something important with you. This something is bigger than you or I, bigger than those fielding this letter, bigger than Russian collusion, Epstein, or Clinton pay-for-play. The important matter is about 9/11 truth and worse, 9/11 treason. I've spent the better part of the last 18 years researching every public aspect of that horrific crime. Volunteer on the professional verifications team at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, and I'm one of the original signatories to the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry petition for a grand jury in the Southern District of New York. I recognize that global acceptance and understanding of 9/11 Truth is inevitable, and I hope that you might appreciate this too. I go on to some stuff about the science dictating various things. I won't bore with all of it, about the building collapses, UA-175 being followed by a secondary aircraft at a stored Air Force base, bombing of the Pentagon, biological warfare against the legislative branch having come from Doug Ware Battelle. Couldn't have been Bruce Ivins. Just a few little details about the stuff that's a mess. But then I say, though the proof of each of these claims is complex and beyond the scope of the UK, I assure you the first domino to fall will be the controlled demolition of our World Trade Center. The NIST findings were co-opted by contractors and are easily refutable by simple FEA programs. Some engineering schools, such as University of Alaska Fairbanks, have already begun the process of deconstructing those lies. Though hundreds of first responders who witnessed the bombings are still alive, and the truth community even has samples of the nanothermite, which was used to help level the buildings, the proof of controlled demolition of our World Trade Center towers can be resolved with simple engineering applications alone, and it is only a matter of time before more entities do exactly that. Embedded specialists in the leadership of ACSE and other engineering organizations have been able to thwart understanding and revelation to a point that their efforts will eventually be toppled by a grassroots understanding from professionals without structural biases or agency allegiances. As a verifier AE 9/11 Truth, I personally see the widespread understanding occurring. We've had over 10,000 engineers and architects sign the petition, with 3,000 having followed through our rigorous verification procedures to be displayed publicly. We've had over 100,000 others sign, with nearly 30,000 undergo verification. Many of our signatories are veterans, physicists, first responders, teachers, lawyers, mathematicians, even former defense contractors. They span race, gender, political alignments. They all want justice. To the point, it is evident that the criminal division under the leadership of Michael Chertoff failed in its duty to investigate the controlled demolition of our towers. It's my personal assessment that this failure was more akin to abetting than absenteeism. Our senior FBI agents were strategically placed in California before the event and then trapped there due to flight groundings. We released apprehended foreign nationals who exhibited clear foreknowledge, and the FBI still has not released the surveillance footage from numerous cameras around our Pentagon. Body scanner technology was ready for profitable rollout on day one, and as you know, so was the installation of our 21st century spying apparatus. Nearly 3,000 noncombatants were mass murdered by bombs in 2001, and many thousands more are still dying from exposure to the toxic dust produced in these demolitions. For those with the rigor and resolve to investigate, it's easy to realize the U.S. government's explanation is outright mythological. It does not serve the American people to perpetuate this mythology. And though the prospect of a house cleaning may seem like a monumental and daunting undertaking, I argue it is the only correct path forward, and one better taken now than later. A world without such a cleansing would be infinitely more grim. I got one more page. I talk about 9/11 being a festering wound, traitors that need adjudication. I ask that any new investigation utilize varied perspective and experts like Roland Engel and other folks. I talk about the nanothermite and salted data detectives. I talk about Project for New American Century. It was an ambitious disaster, which has unnecessarily cost the lives of millions, squandered trillions from the American people, broken domestic and international law, decimated American integrity, and with the Snowden revelations, barely even given us any meaningful strategic ground. Without justice for those mass murdered by bombs, our country will become a neo-feudal wasteland, devoid of freedom, devoid of its foundational purpose. We will function as a subservient vassal for those who attacked us, even more so than we already do. Please, sir, do not allow the controlled demolition of our World Trade Center to go uninvestigated and unresolved for even one more day. The present state of affairs is a national disgrace, and you have the power and authority to correct the record for literally all of us on this earth. If you'd like to discuss the evidence at hand, possibly corrective measures, or even Drew, please feel free to reach out to me directly and leave my contact info. So anyways, you know, I'm at a point where the stuff out there, it's so readily available.
Fantastic.
Hey, thanks, guys.
Yeah, by the way, Xander, this is Barbara. Unfortunately, I have to give you this news. The Lawyers Committee, as I believe everybody on this call knows, but I'll just repeat it in summary. The Lawyers Committee on March 25th, we sued Bill Barr himself, the very man you wrote that letter to. We sued the U.S. Attorney General, Bill Barr, and we sued the director of the FBI for the cover-up of 9/11, for the cover-up of what's called the 9/11 Review Commission report. And I'm here to tell you that on September 11th itself, which was like a slap in the face, Bill Barr himself filed a response to our complaint, to our lawsuit, in which he basically said, go to hell, there's nothing here, you don't have standing, and even if you had standing, which we do, But he said, even if you had standing, if you can believe it, this is Bill Barr himself. He
yeah.
says, even if you had standing, that the FBI and the Department of Justice is not required to respond to any information that would require us to change the 9/11 Commission's identification of the Muslim hijackers and Osama bin Laden as the culprits of 9/11, if you can believe it. So this man is totally and completely on the wrong side of history.
Understood. And that is what it is. So now he knows. I think he's a traitor. You know, good. I'm happy.
I love how you said treasonous, and I would love if you could publish the letter.
It's a wonderful letter.
How do
great
you feel
letter.
About it being spread all over, accompanying Barr's response?
Well, I don't know that he'll respond. Let's see what happens.
I didn't know he responded.
No, he hasn't.
No, that's terrible.
She's talking about something. No, different.
he just responded, and I just got off the lawyers committee board call, and we just approved our response to his abhorrent response that's being filed electronically tonight.
Perfect.
Oh,
yeah, take him to court.
Great.
We need to take them all to court. You know, that's what we got to do.
Share it with the list, Barbara.
Can we write to Bill Barr's office and demanding justice?
Yeah.
He won't do any good. This man has gone formally with the court saying this.
I'm not surprised by that.
Thank you
for
the effort.
Into him, I'm really not surprised. You know, he was kind of inserted probably to help patch up Iran-Contra. You know, his initial tenure was with the Central Intelligence Agency, and that's probably who his master is all along. So, you know, and we know who blew up the building.
He didn't just patch up Iran-Contra. His code name was Robert Johnson, and he was the bad man for the payoff for George H.W.
Okay.
Bush.
All right.
Barr was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So now what? Can we appeal that?
What?
Can we appeal his decision to a higher court?
Well, what's going to happen, it won't be long before the document that I'm referring to will be on the Lawyers Committee website. So it'll be a few days.
Okay.
And then it's up to the judge. Now, the judge has been appointed, the judge who's been appointed in the D.C. Federal Court, basically Bill Barr's motion was called a motion to dismiss, to throw out the case, and not even get to the merits of the case. That's what he's trying to do. So we're hoping that the judge will do the right thing. But even if the judge finds for Bill Barr, which he will likely do, because the judge in the case, Mr. Walker, owes his appointment to Ed Meese, who was the chairman of the 9/11 Review Commission, which did the cover-up in the first place that we filed the lawsuit about. So these people are really, really vicious. They're evil. They're smart. And
well,
we're hoping
they have
that
a lot to protect now.
They have a lot to protect. But the good news is, according to Mick Harrison, our Lawyers Committee litigation director, Mick believes that he's actually, in a way, looking forward to Judge Walker finding for the government, because then we appeal to the appeals court, and the appeals court actually has judges on it that have been finding reasonable decisions. So we're actually looking forward. So in a way, we can't lose. We're either going to win at this level, or we're going to go on to the next level where we have a better chance.
Great. Right. Wow. That's wonderful. Yeah.
Good news.
So I'm very aware of the time, and I know Lynn is still wanting to speak about
I can do it quickly.
Name.
And Barbara, you're doing it for history. We're all doing it for history, too.
That's right.
Have to keep the flame alive.
Not for history, for posterity.
Yeah.
Well, for both.
Yeah.
let's hope it doesn't keep on going up to the Supreme Court, because you know who's on there right now is Kavanaugh. He's a 9/11 criminal himself.
Yeah,
that's right. He is. He'd have to, and if he voted for us, he'd have to be incriminating himself.
Is this Judge Walker related to the Bushes?
I asked about that, and not in any direct way.
Okay.
That we know of. But I wouldn't be surprised.
Nor would I. Okay. All right, Lynn, are you ready to go?
I am. I will just say that for the sixth year in a row, Maine's largest and oldest MOFCA, called Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, their Common Ground Fair hosted Maine 9/11 Truth as one of 55 presenters in their social political action area tents. 60,000 people go to the fair. Not all of them pass through, but we saw a steady stream of people for 3 days, 8 and 9 hours a day, with Cheryl and Greg and my partner Steve manning the booths and all of us getting hoarse. We had a lot of AE 9/11 brochures and signs and peace and war signs. We link ourselves to the whole, you know, we're pacifists, emphasize that the events of 9/11 were used to justify, in quotes, to the American people, the war on terror and all that. And it seems that from the initial days when people looked, gave us double looks in shock that we were even there, many more people are already aware and come up to share new information or personal experiences and just have somebody else to talk with that they don't often have the opportunity to in their own communities, and we all know what that's like. So Cheryl gave a talk. Dick Atlee was unable to, having had an accident, and she did a great job. 25 people there and lots of questions and answers. And at the end, unfortunately, after Cheryl and Greg had left, the two head people from the social and political action area came up and handed us a blue ribbon for the most educational booth. So that was kind of
Bravo! Fun. Bravo!
All right.
Anyway, that was fun. So I don't know what else. Cheryl, do you have something else to add?
Let me just see. Well, we did meet a guy there who said that he was driving by the Newark airport the day before 9/11 and that he saw the FAA building was on fire and they closed the airport down for a while. But we went online to look at it, and it says that it didn't mention the FAA building. It said it was a building that was under construction that was on fire, and they did close down the airport for like a half an hour. They, you know, stopped all the flights. So it was the day before 9/11, so I'm not sure what that means, but it was just kind of interesting to hear him say that.
Sure.
And some other observations, the high school kids that came by were very much wedded to the official story, and they just wouldn't budge. It was depressing. But there were a bunch of people who came by in their 20s and 30s, in that age range, and a couple of them shared with me that they're getting into 9/11 and that they have this big community online in their age group that are sharing and talking about 9/11 and stuff, and they get it. So that was kind of encouraging. And then there was one guy who came to the table, and he kept just staring at us. And then I thought he was kind of looked sympathetic, but he wasn't, and he just kept saying how he was offended by us. And then he said that World Trade Center Building 7, which he said he worked in, was 13 stories high, and when we said it was 47, he, like, kept insisting that it was 13, and so I don't think he knew what he was talking about, but he was very upset with us. But I think he was the only one we had that was, maybe there was more, I can't remember, that were visibly upset. We had several people come who knew nothing about what we were talking about, and they were very open to it, and they said they'd go and do research, so that felt good.
Yeah, there were a lot of people like that, and they weren't irritated. They were open to it, even though they had never heard of Building 7.
Right,
and I did have a high school girl come up and tell me that her high school teacher had shown them some movie, she didn't say what it was, that explained how the NSA and the FBI had covered up for 9/11 events. And she took a big stack. I gave her, you know, lots of those bulk brochures that we had with the different articles and the Bobby McIlvaine. I mean, she went away very happy, and she said, oh, my teacher will be so thrilled to have all this.
That's great. Yeah, and I was just impressed, Lynn, that the people at this fair, like, even let us have a booth, let alone give us their blue ribbon. So that's very exciting.
In my application each year, I just send them the same application, basically, because they're all about sustainability of farming and gardening, you know, organically, obviously. And I stress that the sustainability of democracy is dependent upon a free press and the people knowing what their government is up to. So I think they like that. I have little business cards that say, honoring science, integrity, and courage sustains democracy. Anyway.
That's
been on the line a long time. This is Fern Tishman.
Pardon me?
I'd like to share something. I've been on this phone call for a long time.
Okay. I'm finished.
Okay. Well, I write almost every day about 9/11, and I've recently put out through emails my communications with Ralph Nader, which led up to 9/11. Around 1988, two priests came to me and told me they would help me get accounts of my family. One of them was Marble Church, and Donald Trump belongs to Marble Church. And that's how come he knows how to talk. He learns it from the way that the priests speak. And I had to be... I'm Jewish. I had to be baptized in order that they would get me my look into things, which I never got. And like I've been writing every day. My life is used to for transportation, like Omni, like Academy buses, like I'm always followed by the Second Avenue subway. I've been writing about this for years. I hope you heard Bonnie Faulkner today on Buns and Gutter. Buns and Butter. She talked about America and what to look like. South America.
Fern, you're going in and out a bit, so I'm not sure if everybody heard what you're saying.
Well, 9/11 is about taking the privatizing everything for wars and just taking away all stuff. I write about it every day. I send you emails. I'm better on emails than I am in talking. So skated along. It just really makes me angry that Barr came through today with what he said, because they've been taking off my communications from Yahoo. Like, they take off the money, and some of the things I've been sending have just taken off my email today. So, you know, every area of life is. It's 9/11, the schools, the transportation, the postal office, everything. Anyhow.
Yeah, that is a big concern, the privatization, yeah. Yeah. Okay, it's getting late. Thank you, Fern, for that. Any other comments or things people want to say before we call it a night? All right, I guess not.
I have a question. Yeah. Sorry. It's for Barbara. Are you still there?
Yes.
Just not to answer it now, but would you think about it? U.S. Attorney Berman, he really oversaw the Jeffrey Epstein investigation in a way, right? I mean that was his court, right? So
yeah.
He oversaw that. And that was going on during the time after the petition and after his response to the Lawyers Committee and all that. would you just think about it at some time? What if you have an opinion on his thoughts might be about Epstein's, I'm going to say disappearance, whether he died or not, I don't know. But do you, if you would just think about that, you know.
You're talking about U.S. Attorney Berman?
Right. Uh-huh. So he was, they were doing that investigation and all that research, and then there they go, you know, Epstein is in jail, and then he dies. So they're furious, or are they a part of it?
Don't know. Just absolutely don't know.
Right. Yeah. I would
have to be speculating.
Think more about it. Uh-huh.
Well, I don't believe that Berman is responsible for Epstein's either death or disappearance. I doubt it,
right.
Because I think that they really were going after him. And they're probably very frustrated. That's my guess.
Well,
that's all I can say.
Well, or furious that they've been. What's the word?
I believe that Berman feels that they were sabotaged.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think Berman and his or someone in his office high up did say that they weren't going to let it drop, but you know. Ghislaine Maxwell is still at large, right? I mean, she's the person who needs to be brought in, and I don't think she's been arrested anywhere.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thank you, Barbara.
Uh-huh.
That's all.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks a lot, everyone, for joining us tonight. We went through a lot of information and people sharing. I really appreciate that. And next month, it's on October 30th, and so far, we have Jack Rasmus, who has spoken before. He's going to give us an update on the economy and when the crash is coming, something like that. So, anyway. And then I'm going to see about getting Phil Giraldi for another date. He's very hard to put down.
Yeah, give him our condolences.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And also, I've got some talking to Miko Pelet again to come and give us an update on the Israeli elections. So, that's
great.
Working on that. So, okay. Well, great.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.